We are live coming at you, Common Sense Ohio. Check us out, commonsenseohioshow.com. Here come the judge. There go the judge out the back door, as it turns out. And, you know, this Christmas, maybe you can buy yourself buy your son a truck for Christmas. Battery-operated $20,000 truck. We'll get to that. Toledo makes it number one. How and why, we'll find out, and probably still won't understand it. And then it is 14.26 weeks, 0.274 years. What does that equal? 100 days of Donald Trump in the White House. So, Common Sense Ohio Show brought to you by Harper Plus Accounting. We got a new spot from Harper Plus. We're going to see. We always talk about Harper Plus, but now we're going to really show you Harper Plus. Dan, see if you can tee it up, and we'll. We got a new spot, highly produced Harper Plus spot. We're going to share right now.
Are you an entrepreneur who doesn't know when to pick up the phone or get out the keyboard to contact your CPA?
A lot of people are like that, and one of those things that you have to figure out when is the right time to do that is when you feel like you don't know what's going on. How much money am I making? How do I pay my taxes? I'm running my business out of my checkbook, and I have no clue what's going on. I don't know if my employees are making me money. I don't know if my products are making money. I don't know which way I'm going. I'm upside down. I can't concentrate or can't think about anything other than where the heck am I, instead of thinking, how do I grow and continue on my business? That's when you should call.
So if you're an entrepreneur and you're looking to have a tax question in regards to that, drop it in the comments and we'll try to get back to you.
Good. All right, so professional.
Yeah, look at
holy
that. Imagine
cow.
Anyway, so yeah, we got our own spot. Nice. I mean, look, if you can endure that, you're going to be able to endure this show. I promise you. I promise you.
And you can have an ad like that, too, on our show.
Yeah, you want to be a sponsor. You want to sponsor, sure. Say, for instance, like this day in history. Give us a shout. CommonSenseOhioShow.com. Check us out. We'll get your business. You can have a spot. We'll even help you do it. It's easy. It's fun.
Yeah.
Everybody's doing it. Trust me. It's the cool thing to do. So this day in history, there was a lot of choices, believe it or not, on this day of history, like the fall of Saigon. Lots of them. But I would rather talk about the experiment of a nation. The nation itself, in fact, was an experiment, said George Washington on his inauguration day on April 30, 1789, stressed, of course, the Bill of Rights, the Constitution, humbly stood there in his brown suit and overcoat with his battle sword, of course.
Wow. And brown suit like Obama.
Apparently, I guess. but no, I mean, you know, that's when the experiment started. And
yeah,
it's sort of interesting. That he called it an experiment, and we still think of it as somewhat of an experiment. The other thing, I usually don't only talk about one fact, but I also want to talk about something else. The Louisiana Purchase, I think, was finalized this day history. Mm-hmm. And that's fascinating to me because Thomas Jefferson, who was like one of these guys that says, no, the government can't just do things and the president can't just do it. He did it.
Yeah.
You know, he bought Louisiana.
But it's some kind of a unbelievable, like, alien topic to discuss buying Greenland. We bought a shit ton of real estate as a country.
Well, the closing on that apparently was
we
April
bought Alaska
1803.
Right.
United States and Napoleonic France completed negotiations for Louisiana Purchase, a massive land sale
that
basically doubled our size of our country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you know,
so those people were insane.
They were nuts.
They were dictators that did that. They were orange Hitlers.
The student of history, it tends to repeat itself when you look at it, and you can always find parallels and draw, and that's why they say study. If you don't study history, you're doomed to repeat it. But I think even if you do study it, you are also doomed to repeat it. You just understand that you're going to repeat it.
Yeah.
Well, and sometimes repeating it is not a bad thing something happened good in history to repeat.
Or to claim that something that's happening in history is going to be catastrophic to the world. And you realize you look back and even in our own short history, you find things that are sort of similar that happened in history that we've survived. So we will survive this, I promise.
Yeah.
I think.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Or shall we promise? Anyway, the lead story, here come the judge, the old laugh-in. We're aging ourselves. I mean, that is at the beginning of my TV tenure. Laugh-in. I mean,
ancient.
That's really
history.
Before my time, but I know about it, and I happen to know about it, Norm, because I own a Pontiac GTO. And those who know what a Pontiac, anything about Pontiac GTOs, the judge is like the holy grail of a Pontiac GTO.
They are, man.
A stripped-down judge costs like $2,000 or $2,800 back in the day. It's worth like $2.8 million. It's probably an exaggeration, but not much. I mean, if you get a 72 judge, there was like nine convertibles made, I think, and you still have one of those, that's worth some money.
Yeah. Yeah, Brett looked it up. Flip Wilson.
Flip Wilson.
Old Flip Wilson.
Yeah,
Flip Wilson.
Did that on Laughing.
Here yeah. come to judge. Here yeah. come to his great stuff.
It was yeah. good stuff, man.
But the reason we're talking about that, Norm, obviously we've got judges going out the back door, which is sort of a fascinating topic.
Well, this guy, Judge Cano in New Mexico, a federal district court judge, he and his wife had a Tren de Allegra guy. Not Allegra, that would be a pharmaceutical, but a Tren de Allegra guy living in a casita, which I think is fancy name for a shed, in their backyard in New Mexico. And he was a gang member. They supplied him with guns so he could go target shooting. I mean, it was outrageous behavior on this guy's part. And so he got raided by Pam Bondi and the FBI and ICE, and he's been charged, arrested and charged and suspended. And similarly, not exactly the same fact pattern, but up in Wisconsin, a state judge for the state of Wisconsin ushered, a guy was brought in for assault and, it was a bunch of violent charges.
It was a criminal case. Assault and some other stuff
yeah.
in his courtroom.
Yeah,
and
ICE wanted him. Battery, like it was domestic violence kind of stuff. And he was brought in for, I don't know, an arraignment, a trial. I don't know what it was. And she, the judge, the Wisconsin judge, got the word that the feds were going to arrest him right after the trial, right after the hearing. So after the hearing, she opens up the door to the back of the courthouse, and the lawyer and the defendant were allowed to leave via the back door. And then there was a street chase down the sidewalk with the FBI in hot pursuit of this guy, which exposed everybody to more danger. And obviously it was a complete dereliction of her duty under the law. And she has been suspended by the Wisconsin Supreme Court, which is not, just so you know, which is not a conservative court. So yeah. Even they have recognized what she did was outrageous.
This is troubling on all levels, right? And let me just give you my experience practicing law in front of judges. If I would have done something similar. So for instance, as a lawyer, there's been some disciplinary hearings and some other decisions about what happens when I misinform a court. So if the judge, even if I stand silent and let erroneous assumptions being made.
Yeah.
Like the case I'm talking about, I have a DUI client, and let's say I'm standing in front of the judge and the prosecutor says, "Judge, this is a first offense DUI, therefore first offense mandatory minimum penalties apply." And I, as the attorney for the client, know that that's not accurate.
Yeah.
I know that it's actually the second offense or maybe even the third offense. I have an affirmative duty, ethically speaking anyway, to speak up and fix that.
Yeah. But Steve, just real quick, my understanding from my old days in law school is you are an officer of the court.
I'm an officer of the court, right. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not even half as bad as what this judge did. So no. Let's say that I, my client brings in, if I assist my client in committing a crime, then I'm a criminal, right? You know, it's a crime.
Like you held dirty money or something.
If I hold dirty money or if the client gives me the proceeds of a robbery, like you're mm-hmm. talking about, yeah. and I help them hide it or whatever. And, you know, clients call me all the time and say, "Look, what can I do? How is it?" And I always have the same advice. Look, I can help you not commit a crime, but I can't help you commit a crime.
Yeah.
And, right. you know, it's such yeah. an obvious right. but good distinction. And what this judge did is basically help the client commit a crime.
This is a Wisconsin judge?
The Wisconsin judge, right? So the guy had warrants, and these could be warrants for ICE for being an illegal immigrant. They could be warrants. This happens all the time. I have clients waiting in a court. So this is maybe even a better example. I show up in court with a client who's got a warrant on a different felony. Let's say, for instance, that I'm standing in municipal court conducting an arraignment or some procedural hearing with my client who I know has felony warrants. And I say, "Look, bub, I found out you got felony warrants. Why don't you follow me out the side door? We'll get you out of here." Even though we know the police are out there with handcuffs, ready to take you over to felony court.
Keys are in the ignition.
I'm going to take you out of here. Yeah. I got you. I gotcha. I'm the getaway driver in a crime.
Yes, no kidding.
That's what this judge did. Yeah. And even the people on the left are now they're talking like Thoreau type protest. But look, this is not this is different. These are sworn officers of the court. These people took an oath to follow the law. Now you don't have to agree with the law to follow it. And you know, Sean Hannon, God rest his soul, he used to work for me. He was an army guy who was killed.
Yeah.
And he always I remember asking him in the military, it's like I was reading a bunch of World War II history at the time, and these guys had a term for officers who were, well, they called it chicken shit. You know, officers who were just like needly nitpickers, assholes.
Right. Yeah.
And he said, look, you respect the rank, not the man.
Yeah.
You respect the law.
Of course.
Even if you don't agree with it.
Absolutely.
And, that's what this judge did not do. They did not respect the law.
So the left has been trying to portray this as like a Dred Scott situation. You know, like you're doing something higher like
social justice,
morality.
Right.
No. Come on.
No, this is not getting arrested. This is not Thoreau getting arrested.
This is not Dred Scott. This is not an escaped slave. This is an illegal immigrant who has committed or is being alleged to have committed violent acts, and ICE is there to arrest him. And
it's not
they have the right to do that.
It's not a brown shirt law. The law was in place before the enforcement.
Oh, yeah.
So it's not an ex post facto setting. And so it's not like the judge saying, look, you got these henchmen out there ready to enforce some unconstitutional law that they're making up as we go, so I'm going to help you not do that. Then you might have some argument, but this is a law that was in place. They're in the country unlawfully. There is no dispute about it.
Yeah.
And I guess the ICE agents had, or the federal agents, I don't know if they were ICE or not, but they had followed the, I think we talked about this a few weeks ago.
Some were at least FBI.
There was a protocol that had been put in place. Like you can't just arrest people in a courtroom because that's disturbing things. And you know, there's some sense to that.
Sure.
So they had followed all the protocol. They had notified all the right people.
Yeah.
And by the very notification, by the very protocol that they followed, this judge knew it was coming and then helped them escape. This is.
And do you know why?
These are felonies. I don't think they only got charged with obstruction, but this is a felony.
Well, Steve knows why. Brett knows why. Mm. But for our viewers and listeners, the reason that they had to try to arrest him, you know, at the hearing, right, after the hearing, is because Wisconsin, being a shelter state, do not allow their local police to coordinate with ICE. They actually have a law preventing it, like here in Columbus. We had the FOP in here. They're not allowed to contact ICE, the police officer, right? It's not allowed to contact ICE and say, hey, I have one of your people here. So Wisconsin, the whole state's like that. And so rather than arresting him in the police station, right, where they know he's disarmed, they know he could even be cuffed before they take him, and everybody's much safer, they're forced to go to things like this court hearing. And that's where the feds have to try to make the arrest, because they're not allowed under Wisconsin current policy to go to the police station, which already had him arrested. That's how crazy this whole thing is that you're not allowed to coordinate between the feds and the state. And, you know, some states do allow that and some states don't.
Yep.
Yeah.
So it's actually introduces a dangerous element. Like, you know, when the FBI is chasing this guy out the courthouse, I mean, they at that point don't know if he's armed or not. He could run into traffic. They may have to run into traffic.
You bring up a great point. So it's not just that this judge helped the guy evade ICE. The judge created a situation later that the system is designed to prevent. You know, we don't want like Dirty Harry shootouts in the middle of the road. And you know, this is, and think about what it's encouraging too. Like, I do have a position on it, but I can make this point. I can make this case without taking a position on the immigration policies of Donald Trump. I don't care. They are in place and it is what it is. But the judge still has to follow the law, like it or not. You have to do that. You cannot take, you cannot just rewrite this per your own political bent. And, you know, the people are applauding this and saying, you know, yeah, rah, 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 rah.
It's like the Luigi Mangione thing.
If you permit this, where does it stop?
Well, apparently you can murder people if you don't like them.
Well,
you know?
Mm-hmm. I mean, look, that's not true. But the
Luigi fans say
Luigi fans
well,
say
their
but,
mentality.
But Luigi's also getting prosecuted. So right. look, yeah. I mean, we got to yeah. at least give that a fair assessment. It's not like he's getting away with it.
Yeah.
But you know,
but
there
this
are
idea
people,
that you, like if you feel morally superior, that you're above the law. I saw this mantra of Democrats. You know, like it was like 2 minutes long of people from Pelosi to Hillary Clinton saying no one is above the law. And of course, they're saying that about Trump.
Yeah, of course. Right.
Well, what about these judges? The one in New Mexico, the one in Wisconsin.
It is. This is reprehensible in every way to me. The judge has to follow the law. And I've had this happen where the judge will interpret a law differently than I think.
Sure.
And almost to the point where I'm like, listen, you're close.
Yeah. Right.
You're close.
Yeah.
But at least we have an argument.
Yeah.
And
right.
Fair enough.
And, you know, you'll appeal it if
and
you
I'll
need
appeal
to.
It. Yeah, man. And I'll go to jail and be held. That's never happened to me. But, you know, lawyers will have this kind of defense. Lawyers are notorious for this, have this kind of protest. In fact, in the gang case down in Atlanta last summer, maybe one of the lawyers went to jail because the judge was saying, you have to tell me how you learned about how I, the judge, found out this information that I shouldn't have found out without you knowing. I mean, it's circular. And the lawyer says, look, I'm not telling you that. The judge says, fine, go to jail.
Yeah.
And contempt. Fair enough. But that's the process working.
That's right.
So this judge could say, listen, Mr. Defendant, I don't agree with this, but there are ICE officers out there. Deputies, escort him out.
Yeah.
And we'll do this peacefully.
Peacefully.
And if I have a legal basis to challenge this, I will be on your side, Mr. Defendant. But I don't right now.
Yeah.
You have to go through this.
Yeah.
You know, fair enough. Make a speaking objection about it. Make
That's
a
fine.
Record about it.
Yeah.
Use your platform, if you will. And I
That's
might even
fine.
Have some beef with that, but at least it's not a crime.
That's right.
You know, and
That's right.
And no one gets endangered because of the situation.
Yep. And there's no danger. It's done
right,
peaceably.
Right.
And you're telling the people, I don't agree with this law, but the law is important and we have to follow it.
Right.
And that's what it is. And,
right.
you know, by not doing that, this judge has encouraged, I think you made a good point, the Mangione thing. They've encouraged such behavior.
Yeah.
It's okay to commit. Look, yeah. I have another show called Lawyer Talk. Check it out, lawyertalkpodcast.com. But I had a comment, and Brett was part of this, and somebody was sort of like chastising me a little bit about, because I said, look, I was talking about the factual guilt of Mangione.
Mm. Yeah, he's on camera.
And
Jesus.
And this commenter said something to the effect that I can't believe this. I'm turning you off because, you know, even as lawyers, you don't know innocent until proven guilty. I can make a factual distinction or
right.
a very logical distinction.
Right, right.
I have plenty of clients who are guilty as the day is long.
Right.
And unlike that commenter, I stand up with them in a courtroom and defend them anyway.
That is the process.
Right.
You are doing your
right.
duty. They deserve a vigorous defense, even if they're flat guilty.
Now, let me give you the other side. A couple of weeks ago, I was out in one of the counties out east defending somebody who was charged with a heinous crime who did not, and I would say it out loud, in my opinion, did not get a fair trial. And the social comments were outrageous.
I'm sure.
Outrageous.
Yeah.
Hang this guy, string him up.
Right.
Even deputies at the jail were on their social media going after this guy.
Yeah.
And so I invite all the commenters, you know, have it both ways, but not just, you know, you can't have it one way. You got to have it both ways. I make a very, very bright line distinction between whether I think somebody's guilty and whether I will defend them.
Yeah.
You know, and that's disturbing, I guess, kind of the rabbit hole here, but that's disturbing that you have the police there at the court doing posting on social about their thoughts on a case.
Well,
that's bothersome.
Very bothersome.
I mean, they're allowed to have an opinion. I'm not saying they're not, but to
it was a
voice
guard at a jail. It was a corrections officer at the local
scary.
Jail. Now I will say this, and if they're listening, then maybe they are. Yeah, we're so widespread, worldwide.
Yeah.
The jail or the courtroom deputies, phenomenal. To work with.
Well, they
kept
know
the peace,
better.
Made, if they had an opinion, did not voice it.
No.
They treated me with the utmost respect.
Right.
They treated the other side with the utmost respect. I tip my hat that I'm not even wearing to you. But you're making a good point. It's like if the government entities are compromised,
that's right.
What do we have? We have a compromised judge. And I don't have a problem with somebody saying, look, I don't agree with this law.
Yeah.
But I have to enforce it.
Yeah.
Right.
Fair
That's
enough.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's all right.
I do it every day.
She is also a politician who's elected as a judge. And I don't have any problem with her making a little side bench speech like that. go ahead, speak your mind.
Right,
whatever.
I may disagree, and I might say, what a bunch of nonsense.
Because it's after the hearing. But her hearing's over, and now she wants to make a little comment about, let's have some order here in the court. Let's peacefully transition you to the custody of the federal.
I don't agree with this, but this is the state of the law.
Yeah.
I encourage all my voters, the constituents out there, whoever you are, change it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, you already have this policy of asylum. So, you know, the local police are not allowed to coordinate with the feds. And this is the only way the feds can get the guy.
Right. And look, you know, you hear this term thrown, I think, way too loosely, threat to democracy.
Oh, come on. Yeah.
The threat to democracy is not the feds waiting out there to make this arrest. It's the judge not following the law and using the democratic process. She can use her platform to change the law if that's what she wants.
Yeah, right.
Or try to.
Sure.
But not through her own edict.
No.
Through her own edict.
Right.
So, you know what? I mean, and once that breaks down, where does it end? I mean, we've talked about this before. It's like our founders, like there's certain things we never really had to worry about. And now we're worrying about them on both sides.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's crazy.
You know, we can't do things for the cause just because.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah.
Anyway, that's the threat to democracy. Yeah. That's my
it sure is.
That's my soapbox. I'm off it, hopefully, for the rest of the hour.
Well, you previewed an interesting non-political story, I think so interesting, about consumer tendencies and where I think the market is. As we all know, the cost of brand new trucks is just outrageous.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's crazy. Especially the EV ones. I think that, for example, the Hummer SUV, EV, that thing weighs over five tons.
So we're talking like 14,000 pounds or 12,000 pounds.
Something. It's so outrageous. Like, you pull that in your driveway, it's probably going to crack the concrete.
You don't have your
you're probably right about that.
That's crazy.
That's a good point.
And what's it doing to the roads?
Oh, God. Yeah. So we're all paying for that. So at any rate, this company that Jeff Bezos of Amazon fame has been backing, although this truck is not on Amazon for sale yet, but they're like Hyundais. You can buy a Hyundai on Amazon, like right on it. You go on Amazon, you can buy a Hyundai and they'll deliver it to your house. This truck, they probably will do it. It's called the Slate, or the name of the company is Slate, like, you know, chalkboard slate. And it's a little mini pickup. It's 2 feet shorter than a Ford Ranger, for example. Has a very small open bed, although they have a cap for it if you want it enclosed. It's $20,000 if you can get the EV credit that currently still exists, but may go away.
So that's like a toy.
I mean, it's a toy.
That's like a Polaris.
Yeah, it's Ranger. It's a toy. Right. And it has no radio, no speakers. There's no dashboard controls.
What do you do with it?
Yep. I think what it'll be used for is urban deliveries, like, you know, pizza plate. You know.
From what I understand, you buy it and it's the add-ons. It's not even painted.
It's one color.
They wrap it.
Slate.
Yeah. But you can wrap.
Well, you can wrap it.
That's like the Model T, man.
Yeah.
You can have any color you want as long as it's black.
That's right. So it's super basic steel wheels. Yeah. And the idea is, yes, you can accessorize the hell out of it. Yeah. But the base model is 20,000 with the EV credit, 27 if you don't qualify.
How far does it go? What are they advertising?
150 miles.
Yeah, for the basic, and then you can upgrade to another battery level to maybe 200 miles.
No, I got
it's definitely city grade.
Yeah,
it's city grade.
It's for buzzing around the city.
It is.
I got a buddy looking at one of the Hummers, and you know, it's an incredible looking thing.
Yes.
And if it's as advertised, I mean, wow.
Yeah.
But you're talking $100,000.
I know.
Oh,
120,
easy.
I think.
Yeah, easy. And the Jeep Wagoneer or Grand Wagoneer we talked about, that's $100,000.
Yeah.
The new Lincoln Navigator, it's $100,000.
Well, even the gas ones are $100,000. I mean, they're
right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Right. The hybrids and the diesels, all of them. They're crazy.
And did you see Slate? They're looking to make this in Indiana, right?
They make it in Michigan.
Michigan. Okay. Yeah. I thought something it was Indiana.
Yeah, it's made
too.
In Michigan, it's designed using, I'm sure, former Big Three engineers. I'm sure they hired, people who got laid off.
It reminded me, this is back in the 70s. I remember Dad one time ordering a car. that, you know, wasn't on the lot. Maybe lots at that time just didn't have a lot of cars in inventory, but I remember him ordering one.
Yeah.
Not to specs that was just like crazy specs,
yeah,
but they just didn't have certain models on the lot. And we had to wait 2 or 3 weeks and then
That still happens. Delivery.
Yeah,
that still happens.
You know, sometimes. To a certain degree. But this reminded me of that going, we're going back to that. You order the model you want,
model,
and the upgrade you want.
Wind up windows,
you know,
on this thing.
Now, I was told, you probably know this, Norm. I was told the old ordering cars, because in muscle cars, we say, well, I ordered it with this, and this. It's originally factory ordered like this.
Yeah.
And I was told that you're not really ordering it. You're just reserving one that's built that way. They're not making it custom.
Oh, okay.
I could be wrong. And maybe there was a time they did make them custom. I don't know. And then they get to the dealers, and the dealers had extra access. That's how they had like the saline.
Wow.
Mustang or the Camaro. What was the Camaro?
Saline was a Mustang.
Yeah, but what was the Camaro version of that? The
Z28?
No.
Copo? Camaros?
Yeah.
Central Office Processing.
It was one of the, something
order,
like that. Yeah, like a
COPO.
Yeah, or the Shelby. You could, like, those were accessorized later.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Interesting.
This has nothing to do with anything.
No. But it's
and we
it's,
could be
it's
cars.
Cars. It's guys
we could
and
be
cars,
quite yeah. wrong, but. Yeah. We're going to say it.
Check us out. Right? Yeah. Check us out. So maybe because it's made in Michigan, Toledo is number one.
Ooh, nice transition. The only thing thing I want to say about this Slate company is there is a big company in India called Mahindra, and they make tractors and all kinds of stuff. And I have been waiting for somebody like Kia or Mahindra or somebody to make a mini pickup like this. And I'm so glad if it's going to be made in Michigan.
Yeah, well, he made Michigan.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So, you mentioned Toledo. So the Wall Street Journal came out yesterday with its annual list of the 200 major markets and where they rank in a weird, like, combination of factors. Median home price, some sort of scaling based on increased desirability, and somewhat temperate weather, which you could argue about Toledo having that. But at any rate, they ranked Toledo as number one of all the cities in America for basically being a good bargain place to buy a house. The median price in Toledo being $235,000. Houses on average last 37 days on the market. And prices in Toledo have gone up 18% over the last year. So it's indicating some sort of trend of people, you know, seizing opportunities in a otherwise kind of a depressed, economically city of 600,000 people. Toledo being a fairly large city, actually.
And it has a university tied to it.
Yes.
And usually university towns have a draw because
and they have
of what,
the mud hens.
Yeah, I got to tell you, it just doesn't add up. Something's not adding up.
It is.
Something's not adding
up. Graft and corruption, Steve says.
Yeah, something's not adding up. My son goes to Bowling Green. I had a case in the last couple of years up in Toledo. And look, kudos to the federal court up there. That was treated very well. The judges were great. The prosecutors, the U.S. attorneys were great to work with. I mean, it was a good experience. But as I drove through Toledo, it didn't look like a thriving metropolis.
No. And it's struggling for sure.
Yeah. So I heard somewhere recently that Bowling Green was losing one of their, I forget what the industry was, but something was, there was an industry, some big company was leaving Wood County.
Not good. That's not good, because there's not a lot up there, man.
There's not a lot up there. So, look, I mean, maybe it's just because you can get a good bargain.
I think that's a bunch of it.
There's some marketing going on, too,
The criteria is that you can buy a cheap house. Well, there's a reason you can buy a cheap house.
That's right.
And if the housing is more expensive, it doesn't always correlate. Like, for instance, I don't think that living in the most expensive place in the country necessarily garners you all the best things.
Oh, no. Right. Yeah.
But living in the cheapest part of the country is also the same.
Yeah.
And somewhere in the middle, maybe it's true. There's a level where, look, it costs more to live here, but you can make more to live here, and it sort of equals out. I don't know if that's the case in Toledo or not.
Yeah, they had a really deluxe harbor district going on about, you know, like 25 years ago, and it's gone now. And, you know, which is a shame. It was kind of like the Cleveland Flats area, like a party.
I drove through there sort of half lost not too long ago, and it was weird.
It is weird,
right?
Like out of nowhere, like you're ghetto. All of a sudden, wow, this looks like spring break in Fort Lauderdale, and then ghetto.
But look, I mean, I hope Toledo's turning around. Yeah. I think you know we had some other cities on there too, which is interesting, and they all don't seem like the thriving metropolises in Ohio.
So I have the
metropolises.
Yeah, I do have the median home price in Dayton. It's $240,000. They're in the top 20 Wall Street. So is Youngstown. $185,000 is the median. In Canton, Ohio, Massillon area, $240,000 median.
Yeah. Dayton's always been a head scratcher for me because Dayton is so well placed in the state, if you think about it.
Yes.
Well, it was auto parts. It's
really, really close to Cincinnati, really close
NCR,
to Columbus.
National Cash, LexisNexis.
Used to be auto parts.
Yeah. Yellow Springs, they've got 75, 70.
Yes.
They are, like Columbus, set up really well.
It's a great drug corridor, right from Michigan straight down to
pretty decent, pretty decent airport.
Yeah.
A lot of people from Columbus, to get a better deal, we'll drive to Dayton and fly out.
Yeah, exactly. You know?
And I got
it's always interesting how that city just
Air Force
didn't
Base.
Keep the Air Force Base.
Holy cow.
For the time not, being.
Oh, if you haven't gone to the Air Force Base Museum, it's awesome.
Oh, my gosh.
It's
great.
And it's free.
That's a 2-day gig.
That's a 2-day. Yeah.
Seriously.
So,
if you want to take your time, it's going to take 2 days.
And it's close to Cincinnati, Dayton.
Right.
So that, like, if you want to go see the Reds or the Bengals or whatever, you can see pro sports 50 miles away.
As the locals might say, it's great in Dayton. So I had a case out there recently, and I went to the Pine Club, a restaurant afterwards, to sort of celebrate being done with it. Classic old school steakhouse.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I had a client that talked about that once.
Is that in that hip district?
It's in sort of near the you go past the hospital, and then it's in like this sort of nice revitalized district, maybe close to the university, I think.
That is a beautiful area.
It was neat, and it's old school, man. It's like old school mobster, and right near our booth was a little plaque where George H. Bush, I think, sat and had dinner at one point there. But don't bring your American Express. Don't even bring your Visa. Don't bring your Discover. Don't bring anything but cash, because they do not take anything but cash. Now, apparently you can sign up online and get an account.
Okay.
I don't know what that's all about. Yeah. I didn't do that. I brought cash.
Yeah.
But it is, you bring your cash.
Right. And has been that way all the time, or they just transitioned into that knowing
I happen to.
That's interesting.
When I was trying to make reservations, don't do that because they don't have that either. You show up and you get served when it's your time.
Not far from Dayton is South Lebanon, Ohio, and you can go to the Lamb, which originally George Washington had a meal at. So they probably have a little plaque. Maybe not as great as George Bush. But, George Washington.
Bring it home to GW. All right. This is riveting news.
Yeah. So, other things in Ohio. It was Tuesday. Governor DeWine and the Ohio Tax Credit Authority announced $835 million, if you will, taxpayer investment. Like we just did in Intel, and that blew up, in six companies in order to create a total of 699 jobs. And what it is, it's a seven-year deal for each of these six companies of between 1.2% and 1.8% income tax credit, which adds up to $835 million for all six. And that is, I mean, to give this deal is a little tighter because they do audit the results of whether the jobs are created and for how long. But my basic problem with this is, it's a little better than the Intel thing, but it's, again, the government picking winners and losers. So, like, these six companies, what they are, for example, is a trucking company. One is a Swiss-owned company that does refrigeration for pharmaceuticals. One is a building materials manufacturing company. One is Kimberly-Clark that makes, everything from toilet paper to tampons and whatever. One is an architectural firm that's leasing additional space. So those are examples of, these companies. And what I would say is these companies had somebody on the ball to write for this grant and to get into this program. But what if you're a mom and pop and you don't have the extra employee help or a CPA, or somebody to do this for you? It bothers me that a trucking company is going to get some kind of treatment that all the other trucking companies in Ohio are not going to get. And like, how is that fair?
Yeah. Like,
and how is that a good use? So you and I are subsidizing this deal because obviously our income taxes will have to make up for the $835 million, which is almost a billion, right? That is being spent on these six companies in effect because we're not going to collect the tax from them. So in effect, we're making up the difference with our taxes.
Yeah.
How's that right?
Yeah. It's not right.
It's not
right. It's all just political theater. It's all this is.
Yeah.
Look good. Somebody's paying. Look, there's a certain amount to be paid, generally speaking.
Yeah.
So they're going to collect it somehow, somewhere, some way. Whether they call it this or call it that, somebody's paying for everything.
Yeah. There is no free lunch.
I guess it comes back to the question, what is the government's role in our lives?
Yeah.
Is this their role?
Yeah.
To help bring in business?
I don't have my calculator
handy. It's just a general question of us to think about. What do we want them to do?
Well, Brett, even like if you do the math, like take 699 jobs, divide that into 835 million, and then divide that by seven so you get the per year amount. Right. It just can't be worth it to me. Like,
well, look, the government has tried.
Even as a purchase.
And tried. You have such a great point there, Brett, because the government has tried and tried and tried to manipulate the invisible hand in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
By putting its thumb on the scale.
Yeah.
And it never works. It doesn't work.
No.
It always creates a disruption in the force.
Yeah.
Right? So there's this, like, the works. I mean, ironically, as I read George Washington's inaugural address, here's what he says. No people can be bound to acknowledge and adore the invisible hand which conducts the affairs of men more than the people of the United States. Every step by which they have advanced to the character of an independent nation seems to have been distinguished by some token of providential agency. I mean, he's saying, look, I think he's talking about something other than the invisible hand of economics. But the invisible hand, like the market works, and you can't force it.
Right.
And usually there's always a consequence to that.
Well, when my dad famously, I talk about my dad too much, I can't help it. But when my dad was in the state legislature, famously Governor Rhodes, did the big deal with Honda to bring them, right? And immediately Ford, GM, and Chrysler said, well, what about me, right? I mean, immediately when Honda got all the largesse, the companies that were already in Ohio building cars or making parts for cars were like, well, what about me?
Yeah, you can't give this to that or not to me. You got an equal protection problem. And it's like, listen, and this is what we're fighting, something similar in this DEI front right now, where we want to give to some but not others.
Yeah.
And it's those distinctions. You can always come up with a reason that your group, your class, the people you champion should get it.
Yeah.
But so can the other side.
Right.
And then the person doling it out has a problem.
Right.
And then if you dole it out equally to everybody, well, then since everybody has it, it's no advantage at all. So it's, just stay out.
Well, speaking of DEI, also in Ohio, down in Athens, Ohio University is going to comply with the DEI law passed in Senate Bill 1 and also the Trump order about accreditors, the people who certify that a university is accredited. He ordered them to stop applying DEI requirements. So forthwith, other than the military assistance offices, all of the, like the women's studies and the transgender studies and the gay student offices and all of this DEI stuff at Ohio University, which is probably the most liberal of all the state universities in Ohio, down in Appalachian country, I think the name of the president is a Mr. Chavez, and he announced, we're closing all that down. We're complying.
Good.
So, good.
Very good.
Because as the Harvard case proved to the U.S. Supreme Court, Asian students and white students, whether they're male or female, are just as entitled to the opportunities as anybody else of a different color. Like, that's how can, it's the old Thomas Sowell, Clarence Thomas thing, where how can you correct racial intolerance by injecting racial intolerance?
You can't, right? It's another version of tipping the scales. You can't do it. And you know, that there's an ebb and flow to this, and thankfully it's ebbing.
Well, right? We gave 50 years of affirmative action. Like, when is enough enough, right? Like we did that. That is a historical fact. Some people say Clarence Thomas, for example, got a hand up through for affirmative action. They probably did, okay? But anymore, I mean, Obama got elected president by an overwhelming majority of white voters. Mm-hmm. Like, so when is racial bias, when are we going to finally say?
Well, look, forget about that, but think of it from a different angle. I think anybody would agree that there's racism in this country. Mm. There's racism in all of human affairs. It's always been that way.
And always will be.
And so when people say, well, when I argue with people, I even fall into this trap that I'm going to lay out here in a second, which is people say, yeah, but there's still racist people and there's still this, there's still that. But the position that I take is not to disagree with that.
Right.
It is to say, or ask rather, what is the government going to do about it?
That's exactly right.
And what power are you going to give the government to try to fix this?
Right.
And since when, in the course of human events throughout history of time, has the government been able to control how I think or anybody else thinks?
Well, Steve, to answer your question, right? Mm-hmm. Cro-Magnon human remains have been found intermixed with Neanderthal. And they fought each other. Mm-hmm. And clearly it was a race war.
Yeah,
I mean, it's been going on for...
Well, something was going on. So look, but the government can't stop it.
No.
They can't stop it. Like this is the flaw in the logic from my perspective. And people might disagree with me, but you can give the government all the power in the world. So I remember a law professor, I think it was one of the Ivy law professors from a law school.
Yes.
Or from an Ivy League law school was saying, look, the Constitution, the First Amendment, this is all getting in the way because with this process, we don't have enough power to fix racism, global warming,
right?
All the other inequities, and they had a whole laundry list. And
create utopia.
The premise was so absurd.
Yeah.
One, that all those problems existed. So, you know, they certainly didn't exist on the level that this guy was advocating. So whether they exist or not, maybe.
Yeah.
Two, he could fix it.
Yeah, that's the absurdity.
If only you ordain these people with all the power, they're going to fix it somehow.
Give me a free hand, I'll fix this.
I'll fix it. I'll fix global warming. It's like, what and how? Yeah.
Well, and it stops the conversation. To me, my perspective, it stops the conversation. And two questions to be asked. It's that, okay, it's not what's wrong with you as asking a racist person. What's wrong with you? You're racist. It's like, what happened to you to become racist?
For sure.
That's the question.
And most people are taught it.
Right. And this overreaching, powerful hand of government law stops us from having this conversation.
You don't have the in fact, it squelches it. You're right. It stops in its tracks. I mean, there's not, it's almost racist to have that conversation by their measures.
And I got to be a part of an interview with a person who is in the DEI space for the past 20 years. And it's interesting from her perspective, and I have to go with what she says, is how DEI started and now where it is today.
It's a different place.
Changed. Because she said initially DEI 20 odd years ago.
It wasn't called DEI.
It wasn't, no. But it's that welcoming and understanding everybody has problems.
Yeah.
And how can you work with them in your workplace?
Right.
And it could be handicap.
Yeah.
It could be anything, you know, that sort of thing. Orphaned or I don't, whatever you want to.
Absolutely.
The problem and recognizing them and then walking them into the workspace and help them do the best job that they can.
Hearing and impaired, all kinds of issues.
Exactly. Yeah. Blind, whatever it might be.
Exactly.
And those are the extremes to a certain degree.
Right.
But now we've turned it in. DEI's turned into this weaponized. You will learn that you have to incorporate these people in. It's like,
or you're a bad person because you were born of a certain skin
color.
Exactly.
Like, or you have this,
you don't even know how bad you are because you can't see the water you're swimming in.
Right.
So what I'm concerned about, Brett and I had a really interesting discussion a couple of weeks ago, and what I am concerned about is like the new DEI, and I hope it doesn't mutate into this, and we talked about the campus. So I hate these speech codes on campus. It's poison. And what I'm afraid of is in its zeal to protect Jewish students, whom I want to be protected absolutely against any violence or threats of violence. But I am concerned on the campus of Harvard, Yale, Princeton, these liberal places that are so pro-Hamas and pro-Palestine. You know, I'm concerned that the Trump kind of effect will prevent people from expressing, if they wish, like, even though I find it detestable, for them to express their hatred of Jews. If that's what they want to talk about,
they should be able to.
They should be able to. Or, now, do I like it? No, I don't.
This is
should be able to be free. Now, not necessarily illegal immigrants, because they're stirring up stuff.
Well, look, there's always a limit.
There's a limit.
Right.
But if an anti-Semitic group,
applies for a permit,
gets a permit,
and parades,
and wants to parade around and talk about how horrible and called Jews termites and all the tropes that they use.
The KKK.
They have a right to do it.
They have a right to do that.
Just like I have a right to do the opposite.
And mm-hmm. I'm concerned that, like, when the White House talks about taking away, I mean, Harvard shouldn't be getting $9 billion, but when they talk about disenfranchising them from doing business with the federal government because people are speaking horrible things on campus.
Suppressing speech is suppressing speech.
Dude,
is suppressing
that's
speech.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And I am concerned about that. Like, they should not go too far with this.
Well,
that's what I'm saying.
The backlash. And look, I guess related to DEI and some of these measures is, I think it's worth at least talking a little bit about the legalities of, I think there was an executive order Trump signed, or at least is about to sign, that has eliminated or will eliminate what the law calls disparate impact proof of discrimination.
Yeah.
So disparate, like if I'm discriminating.
Which LBJ originally did.
Well, it came on the heels of Title VII. So I think.
Yes. So 1968, I think.
You have, if I discriminate, if I'm the government, because we'll take it out of private for now, and Title VII would apply to private, but let's just say somebody is discriminating against an employee. And I say, I don't hire black people. I don't hire Jewish people. I don't hire norms of the world because I don't like race car drivers. Whatever it is, if it's a protected class, then that's obvious because I have said it out loud.
Right.
But then it gets dicey. The law created this disparate impact type of evidence that would go through like a statistical analysis of how a policy at my business could impact somebody of a protected class differently. And the idea was to protect against me masquerading or under the guise of a policy, creating racist policies. So I could say, look, I only hire people from this neighborhood. Well, we know that there are only white people in that neighborhood and no black people in that neighborhood.
Right.
So that's a disparate impact.
So we're going to look into your actions and impute an intention.
An intent. And sometimes you can, sometimes you can't.
Yeah.
But like all these things, it was designed, the design of it or the stated purpose of it is not necessarily what happened. So you have disparate impact. So you're creating racism and discrimination where it doesn't exist.
Right.
And, you know, these means of proof get real squirrely and dicey and the lawyers go crazy over it.
Yeah.
So good, bad, or ugly, I think there's going to be an executive order or has been an executive order eliminating that. Now, what I don't know is whether Trump has the authority as an executive to sign an order getting rid of that.
Well,
Congress is going to have to act.
LBJ signed it to bring it in.
I don't know if he signed it as an executive order or if he signed it as a congressional act. So I don't know enough about it, but it's interesting. You know, it shows you the backlash that's coming.
So if you want to hire people on the basis of merit, which is not only moral, but it's also the smart business thing, right? Like, I don't care if somebody's purple, if they're a woman, if they're a trans, if they're gay, if they are the best mathematician and I'm running a nuclear power plant and I'm hiring engineers, I'm hiring the best based on merit. I could care less who they sleep with or what color they
and
are.
And then you know, it's gone so far as to like the cake bakers. And I used to have this debate upstairs in the law practice. Not that I did it, but let's just say internally we would have these discussions. Debate's not even the right word. It'd be like, should the government be able to prevent me from saying outwardly, I don't represent people of a certain race. I don't represent gay people. I don't represent black people. I only represent white Aryans with German heritage.
Okay.
I am a Nazi.
Yeah.
And I only represent those people.
I'm a Nazi lawyer.
I'm a Nazi lawyer. That's all I do. Or you could flip it around. I only represent Jews. I only represent people of a certain type. And, you know, there, like a knee jerk from the public is generally, you shouldn't be able to do that.
Right.
And then you start to think like, all right, I'm providing a service. Do you think that if the government says I have to do it, one, that I will comply, and two, if I do comply, you think they're getting the same service that I would give everybody else?
Exactly.
I mean, isn't that dangerous? Think of the unintended consequences of that.
It sure is, right.
And it just shows, like, what sounds good doesn't always result in good.
Right.
When it's applied.
Well, and multiple layers there, too. So, okay, you're forcing me to serve this clientele. Well, that clientele's going to pay more.
Right. Or what if they
So then another law comes into place. You have to charge them the same. And another piece.
Or do
another,
a worse just, job.
And just then how, like, do you, right. how do you decide, since you, yeah. Brett, are of a certain skin color and you, Norm, are of a certain ethnic origin, but I charge you more for seemingly the same case, but maybe there's a nuance there that maybe you're a bigger pain in the ass.
Exactly.
And you bug me more, so I charge you more. Right. You take more of my time, in other words.
Yeah.
Pain in the ass isn't the right word.
Right, but yeah.
But you take more of my time.
Right.
So you have to pay more. But if you look at the disparate impact of that, then it looks discriminatory.
Sure it does. Mm-hmm.
Or if I just say, look, I'm not going to represent the solution is obvious to me. If I'm not going to represent people of a certain color, well then I, another enterprising young lawyer, I'm going to look at that and say, I'm going to lease space right next door to this asshole, exactly. And I'm going to take all comers.
Why do you think car dealerships place each other right next to each other?
Right.
It's because they're shopping.
This idiot is going to cut out a business source of clientele because he's a racist lunatic? Fine.
Right. I'll take
them. You have at it.
Exactly. Or if they
have tamped out of existence.
Exactly. Or if they have like a legitimate, and I don't mean legitimate to you, but legitimate to them. So if they have sincere religious beliefs about, like, gay marriage, right? And so the cake maker doesn't want to make gay marriage cakes.
Right.
That's an opportunity for a gay marriage cake maker to go into that business.
Yeah, and look, so, and it makes perfect sense. It makes perfect sense. And lawyers have, like, I've had a conflict of interest emerge in my practice recently. Not my practice, but I was analyzing a case. And, you know, a lawyer had an interest in the case.
Okay, yeah.
A personal interest in the case in something going on in the case outside the representation. I won't go into detail, but outside the representation, we had an ethics expert come in and he said, look, it's a two-step analysis. The first thing we have to do as lawyers is assess, how does this impact my ability to represent this guy? And if I think that it has any impact at all, then I have to bail. I can't do it.
Okay.
Even if I think it doesn't have any impact, I have to notify my client and get a waiver written in writing and get a waiver. So look, I mean, if you're going to say that I have to represent gay people as a lawyer and I don't agree with that lifestyle, then I'm not going to, I will do that analysis, but I'm not going to tell you. And I'm, you know, it's like, you know, you're going to squelch it. You're going to drive it underground. But if you create the competition, you're going to, the logical fallacy, I think I've talked about last week even, it's called reductio ad absurdum. You reduce the logic to its own absurdity. It's stupid.
Yeah.
It's dumb.
You're driving away business.
I'll represent Mangione. I'll represent Norm. I'll represent Brett. Right. I'll represent somebody innocent. I'll represent somebody guilty.
Yeah.
And if I can't, I won't.
Yeah.
So, you know, there was a time I love dogs. If somebody's going to, if the animal cruelty, like, I get sort of squirrely about it.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
Probably not take that kind of a
Sometimes
case.
Sometimes I've had to say, look, man, I'm not your guy.
Yeah. Right.
Go over here.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's what you would want.
And that's, yes.
Right.
That's what you would want. And you're discouraging it.
And we were speaking about judges earlier, and like Steve talks about lawyers, judges also recuse themselves.
Yep.
You know, if they happen to have a relationship with one of the parties.
They got
to
get out, right?
Yeah,
so, but if you're not going to permit that kind of thing, then you're not going to encourage people to disclose those kind of problems. And it doesn't change the problem. It just drives it underground.
Yeah.
So, look, we're getting towards the hour. We should probably talk about how many weeks it's been, how many days it's been, how many hours it's been, because in the end of the day, it's still 100 days of Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. And this will be a good segue into things that we like and hate.
Yeah, when is the official 100 day?
It was yesterday.
It was yesterday. Okay,
yeah. I missed it. 100 days, okay. Right? So
and
how
they,
about that?
They actually put out a video, the White House did.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good for them.
Like a little movie.
It's gotten so...
It's all production.
It's just gotten so foolish. Everything's just gotten foolish.
Yeah.
Well, did you see where they put up all the posters of the illegal immigrants that were wanted for violent crimes? They put them all over the White House lawn. So that even when CNN or MSNBC, which, you know, they all hate Trump, when the reporters are doing White House-like updates, all these big posters are in the background.
It's just, and I guess Trump, has Trump done, like, put up signs?
He trolls these people so badly. I mean, he's killing them. Like, he hasn't gone to a White House correspondence dinner ever. And it's like, I'm not going to give you, me, so you could stick your spears in my side.
Yet he does it day in and day out. I mean, it's like he never gets enough credit, I think, for this. Like him or hate him, he never gets enough credit for saying, look, I'm here every day for a press conference. Ask me whatever the hell you want.
Right.
And you may not like my answers, yeah. Maybe it's not every day, but like after 4 years of Biden, who never had a press conference.
No. Yeah. This guy does 2 hours every day.
He's signing orders saying, here, what do you think of that?
What do you think of that?
This is the most bestest possible, greatest order of all
you
time.
You back there, that's fake news. You're fake news. Like he goes into these debates with people right to them.
Right. It's unreal. So love it or hate it, it's at least interesting.
Sure. So, okay. So I think we do good things, bad things about his 100 days.
Yeah.
I think that's a good idea, Steve. Yeah. So I will just say the one thing, because I have so many, the one thing that just blows me away is at the peak of Biden, there were 300,000, like 10,000 a day, 300,000 a month illegals either gotaways or released into the country given a hearing date that they'll never show up for, right? Under Trump last month, it was 9 people.
Mm-hmm.
9 people, illegals, were released into the country and given a date.
Yeah.
As opposed to 300,000.
Well, and then how many people crossing? I mean, look,
it's unbelievable. And Biden the whole time was saying,
I can't do it. I don't have power.
I don't have power from Congress.
It's the Republican because they blocked my bill.
Yeah. There was no bill needed. No. There was just a new president that was needed.
Oh, and Trump was right about that. So
yeah.
So that's my good thing. My bad thing is that under the tariff thing, it's kind of a good thing, but like all of the Kroger, like people don't read the label. But if you read the label on all of Kroger's produce, canned produce, under the Kroger label, all of it, every bit of it, whether it's mandarin oranges, peaches, pears, cherries, it's all from China. And because of the 145% tariff, right, those cans are now going to greatly exceed American-made canned produce like from Del Monte. So is that a bad thing? Hey, I'm willing to pay more for American safe produce than I am for Chinese produce. So that's my bad thing.
Gotcha. I guess the only thing, I'm not going to go good or bad, but it's just a head scratcher to me is the number of executive orders that he did put in place. But then his comment, and I caught this a couple of days ago, 2016, of just saying that when you've got the people in power, you don't need executive orders.
Yeah.
Look, you know, so I guess I don't think when you've got the power, you've got the votes, why are you doing executive order? He was downplaying at that point in time. So why now is it the flavor of the day?
It is.
So I don't know.
I agree.
It's a head scratcher on me. And I guess also we talked about this before we started recording too. The Canada scenario, situation, it bothers me.
Yeah,
and I'm not a Canada lover. I don't mean that, but I was always under the impression we had a pretty good neighbor, and now we're kind of poking it. So, but you know, it'll all come out.
It will because
we as people will get along.
Fascist,
this is politics.
Brett. You know.
Well, and so
Trudeau was a fascist.
The new guy is the same. I forget his name.
Yeah. I mean, look what they did to Jordan Peterson under Trudeau. But look what they did to the truckers who were.
And they elected another guy, a little bit uglier.
So I don't know. Canada's been out of control for a long time. They're not a warm, fuzzy place.
Yeah. Well,
that's my opinion.
Well, I agree with you, Brett, on the executive orders. I think, you know, that's one of the reasons I led with GW, George Washington, because he in his inaugural speech emphasized the importance of the Constitution and importance of Congress, et cetera. And that's not to blame. That's not to say Trump is violating all of it. It's just our country has gotten to a place where Congress does nothing, essentially nothing. Mm. They have one big omnibus bill, which Trump better pass that, by the way, I think.
It's not up to him to pass it.
Was it the big, gorgeous, beautiful spend? They better get that through. Anyway.
Yeah. May the 4th, I think, is the...
Yeah, they got it.
Isn't it? Or is it June the 4th? It's a deadline.
I don't know.
No, it's because they're hoping to get it done by Labor Day, so it's got to be in June.
Yeah.
But anyway, we've shifted to this world where executive orders and administrative agencies govern our country, and I don't like it. And if we're going to reset anything, let's do that. Now, Trump did some of that, but that sort of petered out in the DOE stuff has sort of petered out, and some of that's petered out.
Because they have to pass laws.
And
the DOE stuff will not be permanent. They got to pass the laws.
Is the Doge, that goes away in another month, right? Was it 100 days or so?
Well, the Doge Department was actually created by Obama, so I think it will continue.
It was created for anyway. Yes.
Yeah.
So, no, it was created to cut costs.
He had this IT thing going. I get you.
Yeah.
And Trump just said, "We'll just use that and turn into Doge." Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I think I agree with you on the executive orders. They are too much, but it's not just Trump. I mean, this started Obama after his first term said. Yeah. In his first term, said, "Look, I can't do anything. I have Congress. I have to respect that." And then, as soon as he realized he didn't have Congress anymore, he goes, "Well, I can do it with my phone and my pen."
Right.
And you know, then it's this escalation of executive orders.
Well, to undo Obama and Biden, you have to use executive orders because they use stuff.
It's a seesaw now.
So on Trump's very first day in office, 26 executive orders,
and Biden did the same thing. And you know, it's just this seesaw. So
right. We need to pass laws. That's what needs
Congress
to
needs to go back. I think where they work like 14 weeks a year.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
So
and they get paid pretty good jack now. They get paid, come on, guys.
And anyway, so that's I'm with you on that. I guess my good with Trump is that sort of like you, Norm, he has stopped immigration in its tracks. He got off to a great start, I think, with some of the executive orders rescinding a lot of this other stuff, and he also got off to a great start, I think, with this idea that look, we're gonna let the people govern this.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to have this transparency, et cetera. But then the tariffs came along. And I think his whether you agree with tariffs or don't agree with tariffs, it seems like Trump's sort of leaning towards this tariffs are going to replace income tax, which I think is a complete, there's no way that's ever going to happen.
No, it's not going to happen.
And it's not even I don't want to call it laughable, but it's like, I don't know if he really believes that. But
well, the country did operate that way for
it did, but the world has changed.
Yeah, I understand that, but I mean,
the world has changed.
It's as preposterous as saying we can buy Greenland. It is theoretically possible. Yes, the world has changed, but we always were a commerce country.
I get it, but I don't think we're going to get rid of income tax.
No,
and
I don't
replace
think so.
It with tariffs.
Right.
And Trump's treading on dangerous waters, not necessarily about the tariff policy, but for the lack of a tariff policy. He's not telling anybody what his goal is. So look, like to your point,
Brett, he's being very flexible.
If he would have said to Canada, look, you guys are tariffing our farm products or our products, get rid of that or we'll tariff yours.
Well, he did have that. Trudeau went down to Mar-a-Lago. They had a conversation.
I get it, but then
and
he didn't
Canada
stop.
Didn't do it.
But the messaging has gotten out of whack. People don't understand it. And you can say, look, that's the market's problem or this or that, but Trump's not messaging it right either.
I would disagree about the flexibility. So just yesterday, for example, Brett and I were talking about how you are stacking tariffs unfairly on things that move across the border, say 12 times to make a car between Detroit and Windsor, Ontario, and the steel, aluminum, engines, rear axles, tires, stuff going back and forth across the border 11 times, and then theoretically getting tariffed each time it goes across.
Sure, so get rid of them all.
They got rid of that yesterday. So right. Trump, but to his credit, is listening to people and he is being flexible.
I'm not disagreeing.
So he just changed that
yesterday. I think maybe two things are happening. One, Trump's messaging, as it always is like this sort of superlative, a little bit bombastic, I know and you don't. That's the first problem. The second problem
is you call it a problem. Scott Bessent, who's Secretary of the Treasury, calls it strategic.
Maybe wishful thinking, but
okay. Well, I think it's working.
Well, maybe. But the second problem is
Merck is moving from Ireland to the U.S. to make drugs.
The media is not interested in hearing any sort of coherent policy. They love making it chaos. So I think both those things are operating at the same time to create this chaos.
Of course.
So anyway, that's my problem.
I agree
my
with
problem.
That.
Yeah.
And I think looming out there, we have a China problem. And that is, I'm not saying Trump is screwing that up or doing well with it. I think it's just something that we need to keep our eyes on that because that's coming and it's coming right quick, as they say. So anyway, that's what I love and hate.
Dude.
All right.
Awesome.
All right. So anyway, Common Sense Ohio.
Guys, I love the fact that we all think individually we're different people. And I love this.
Yeah, I hate you for it.
This is what makes our show beautiful.
I learn something every day.
I do. Well,
every weekend.
We are not rubber stampers. Like when Steve says something and it's brilliant, I don't necessarily rubber stamp it, nor does he do that with Brett or me. this is what we need is open, you know, like no, what do they call it, on campus?
A no judgment zone kind of feel to it.
This is freedom of speech, right?
Freedom of speech, man.
And really go into the conversation knowing that you're not going to change a person's mind.
Right.
No, you're
going
to learn something.
That's not the purpose of the conversation. And I think a lot of conversations in my family specifically is that they don't want to have the conversation because, well, you're not going to change my mind. That is what they say. It's like, that's not why we're talking.
That's very close-minded.
I don't want to change your mind.
I want to learn from you. I don't want to change your mind.
Right. Exactly. Allow me to understand where you're coming from this. And it stops it.
Right.
You know? Yeah.
Anyway, so that's the idea of Common Sense Ohio, is to bring a common sense dose of reality right here to the roundtable at 511. You can check us out at Common Sense Ohio Show.com. We're on all the socials. We're streaming live weekly. Leave a comment, send us a question, do whatever. Norm will take you on. He's happy to anytime, anywhere, in public even. If you want to be a guest or you want to be a sponsor, you know how to find us. Common Sense Ohio Show.com, coming at you Wednesday in and Wednesday out, right from the middle.